listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is The Shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. With us today, Mike Dobbs, managing editor of the Reminder Newspapers, and making his shortlist debut, Dave Eisenstatter, managing editor of the Valley Advocate. Welcome to you both.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, great to be here.
A number of mayoral races this week were decided across Western Mass. Incumbents Alex Morse in Holyoke and David Narkowitz in Northampton were reelected. Here's Narkowitz.
I've been very out in the community during the time that I've been mayor, very present in the community, involved in lots of different events. And so I think people have, you know, gotten to know me.
Dave, specifically on Holyoke and Northampton, any surprise in these easy election days for the incumbents?
I would say absolutely not with Mayor Narkowitz. I see him all the time. I think the one surprise was that I saw him once without wearing a suit. He was wearing a T-shirt, but he is everywhere. As for Morse, it was a bit of a closer race for him, but I thought it was really interesting what happened over election night all over the country. Progressives winning, and you really saw that in the mayoral races and especially the city council races too. I think the city council. It was interesting to see who stayed on, who got off, and I think it'll be interesting to see Mayor Morse's relationship with the city council moving forward.
And there's going to be three new mayors across Western Massachusetts, in Agawam, East Hampton, and North Adams, where the incumbents chose not to run. In Agawam, former school superintendent Bill Cipelli won. Here's his plan.
I'm not going to march in and say, here's how we're going to fix all these problems. I'm going to sit down with those people, the DPW, the police, the fire, and start sitting down with them and saying, okay, here's what I see as some of the needs in town. What are your thoughts?
And Mike, what are your thoughts about Tuesday's results? Anything surprise you?
The Agawam mayor's race was the one mayor's race in Hampden County that I think some people had some doubts on. Cipelli was the favorite. He was supported by former mayor Richard Cohen. The neat surprise in Agawam was the fact that Cohen decided to run for city council, and Susan Dawson was running for city council. So we had two former mayors, and Dawson finished dead last, and Cohen wasn't much better. So it was interesting. I think the electorate in Agawam was saying, we really want to change, and we don't want either of these former mayors any longer in any capacity.
On a related topic, also Tuesday, voters in Westfield decided to keep the term for its mayor at 2 years, and that bucks a recent trend of some communities extending terms to 4 years. In Massachusetts, of the 46 cities with mayors, 20 of them have four-year terms. Mike, what are the pros or cons to a two-year or a four-year term?
Well, I think the pro that's always talked about is the fact that with a two-year term, the second year of the term is always about running for re-election. In Springfield, the way they sold the four-year term was this gives the mayor an actual length of time to get stuff done without having to worry about reelection. Now, in Chicopee, Mayor Koss is dead set against four-year term. He really believes the electorate needs to be able to change out mayors every 2 years if that's what they desire.
There was one mayor that described running every other year to me as running for your life every 2 years. Dave, what do you think about this?
Yeah, more elections means more chances for the voters to have their say. And I think the Westfield voters were responsible in voting against it. Holyoke voters 2 years ago made a different choice, and we'll see how they like the four-year term that Morse just won.
A recent article in the Valley Advocate says paramilitary policing or law enforcement using military-like tactics is on the rise in Western Mass, and the costs are steep. There are federal grants that cover some of the equipment, but there's also the expense of training officers. For instance, in Ludlow, it costs $2,000 a month to train officers for the special response team. Dave, this is your paper's story. How often are tactics like this being used, and for what purposes?
Yeah, we were really glad to work with the Boston Institute for Nonprofit Journalism on this one, and with Seth Kirshner, who's an awesome investigative reporter. An interesting piece of this is LA County's SWAT team, their special response team, they got to pick among hundreds of officers. They got to choose the best half of 1% of their officers. In Ludlow, one of the smallest communities that has its own SWAT team, they're choosing from among 40 officers. The militarization of these small police departments, oftentimes what happens is they've got to make sure that people know that they exist and that they're used well, but it doesn't always work out that way. In 2015, Ludlow's special response team, did a marijuana raid. It was the guy's crime was growing marijuana in a closet. They confiscated High Times magazines. Not exactly the best use for a SWAT team.
Mike, militarizing police is a controversial topic. Some feel it's necessary to handle certain situations. Others see it as unnecessary. What do you think?
I think that we have to take a look at what is actually happening in our communities. In a community such as Springfield, for instance, if you go into many neighborhoods, we're talking about two major kinds of crimes, which is gang-related crimes and quality of life issues. Springfield has been on the forefront in trying to address quality of life stuff, at the same time trying to deal with the issues that we've got related to gang-related violence. Neither of these require a tank. Okay, if I was a police commissioner and someone said, hey, there's a federal grant and you can get all these neat toys, I would probably say, sure, why not? But the bottom line is how are police being used? And the average police officer looking at the average situation in their community does not need these kind of tactics or weapons.
Mike, let's talk about something you wrote about this week. A recent report out of UMass looked at customers of the new slots parlor in southeastern Mass. The study gave a lot of insight into who's spending their money at Plain Ridge Park Casino. What's the headline and what can we gather from this, if anything, from the set of data as far as the MGM project here in Springfield goes?
I was very curious to see their detailed analysis of just who are the customers for the Plain Ridge Park. And basically, simply, it's old white people. And if you talk to the folks at MGM, they're going to tell you they cannot rely on old white people. They're going to want millennials, like my friend Dave over here. They want people of every ethnic group. They've got to make this appealing. So whereas the state has done has had some success with Plain Ridge Park, the bottom line is don't expect what they do there to be repeated at MGM or at the Wynn Casino when it's opened.
Dave, I'll give you the last couple of words on this.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to talk about the second half of your column, which is about Dunkin' Donuts dropping their name, dropping the donuts from their name. And I'm all for it. I think they've gone hard on coffee over the last few years. You know, people, sometimes they drink coffee every day. Do they eat donuts every day? I don't know.
All right, Dave Eisenstatter of the Valley Advocate and Mike Dobbs with the Reminder Newspapers, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And thank you, our loyal listeners of the shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. Remember, you can catch us at any time wherever you get your podcasts or at nepr.net/podcast. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.